Welcome, 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 everybody, to the latest edition of Sempre. My name is Ken, and I'm going to be hosting tonight, and we're going to be talking about a bunch of things that have gone on in the Napoli world the last week or week and a half. We're going to go over the Parma match, we're going to go over the weekend match against Juventus, and we are going to go over last night's match against Liverpool in the Champions League. Introducing everybody who's going to be on the show tonight. First, joining us, I know it's late in Serbia right now, but Kirsten Schluitz. Kirsten, how you doing?
Yep, I'm here, I'm awake, but if I make mistakes, I'm blaming it on the late hour. Hi, everyone.
Understood. Joining us for the first time in a while is Marco Cubani D'Onofrio. Marco, how's it going?
I'm good. We had a Napoli win yesterday, and the Leafs beat the Habs, so I'm in a good mood right now.
Nice, yeah, Tavares joining the Habs. I mean, the Leafs, very nice. Yeah, I think the Leafs are going to be good this year, man. I think you guys got a nice young team. Should be a fun season for you.
I hope so.
It's been a while. I know it's been a while. And last but certainly not least is going viral, Rafa Rispo. Rafa, how's it going?
I'm going viral. That's how it's going. I'm doing good, man. I'm on cloud nine still from yesterday's result, and I'm happy to say that Kenny, yours and mine, New York Rangers, are not going to be as good as the Leafs this year.
But no, not nearly as good as the Leafs.
Hey, you guys had your years, all right? Give us a chance.
Hey, some of us don't even have a team yet. Let's remember that.
That's true. But yeah, no, I'm doing great, man. I'm flying high, bro. Flying high.
Yeah, I mean, definitely reasons for that after yesterday for sure. But first, we'll go over another positive result from last week, in the middle of the week. We hosted Parma in their first trip to the San Paolo in quite a while. And we got a 3-0 win. Napoli, I think maybe this might have been the first match we officially lined up in the new 4-4-2. We had Kevin Malcuy make his Napoli debut. Fabian make his Serie A first Serie A start as well, Insigne with Milik, and it's a 3-0 win. So, I mean, this was a pretty dominant performance, and we'll try not to touch on this too much because I know we got two big matches to talk about, but 3-0 win thoughts. We'll start with you, Marco.
Yeah, it was absolutely massive, and I was impressed with the sheer fact that we were able to rotate 9 players from the match previous against Torino, so that speaks volumes. And we saw once again, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, and I don't want to talk about yesterday's big win, but we saw why Carlo Ancelotti is Carlo Ancelotti, and Malcuy was just amazing. I was probably too excited too early, just because, honestly, from the opening minute, he just looked really, really good. So I tried not to, you know, jump to conclusions, but honestly, I think he may be our future. I think we need him. And I think once Goulam comes back as well, we'll have more depth at that position than we've ever seen before. And I think it's exciting times from a Napoli point of view.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Malcuy came in on his first start. I mean, and I do agree. You have to give Carlo a little bit of credit here. He puts Malcuy in a game that, you know, you think maybe he's setting him up to succeed, and he does just that. You know, I thought him and Fabian and even Insigne going down that right-hand side had immediate connections with each other, and it was pretty impressive to see. Rafa?
Yeah, I mean, it was the Kevin Malcuy show for me. I was, you know, you could take so many things away from that game last week, and you know, Milik's brace, you know, I think that's like his fifth or sixth brace with the team. As little as he's played with us because of injury, he's actually, you know, scored, you know, 2 goals a game 5 or 6 times, and that's pretty impressive. And then you have, you know, the placement of Insignia working again and all that. And I think everything was pretty much, I think Malqui's performance, for me anyway, overshadowed everything, because it was just, he was crossing the ball in. He was, his runs off the ball too really impressed me. His ability to come up and down and just the ideas he had. And it was great to see that on the heels of, you know, Ghulam's, you know, hopeful return very soon. Because I think if you can have Ghulam on the left and Malqui on the right there, we could have a special set of fullbacks there.
Yeah, I agree. I think Ghulam coming back really gives us another dimension. And I think, you know, Mario Rui has done a better than serviceable job. But I also think that he's obviously not the type of player that Ghulam can be. Whether he will reach the heights that he had last season before the injury, we'll wait and see. It's been about a full calendar year now. But Kirsten, I know Maksimovic got a start last week. So how do you feel about Nikola's performance last week?
Well, I think last week's is overshadowed by my pride in him this week, but we're not jumping ahead. I mean, I thought he did very well in that game, but like y'all are saying, the attention was on the excitement that we have in the fullbacks. But yes, I was so excited when I saw that lineup and he was getting his chance, and I thought it was a good time for him to be on the pitch, and he proved me right that he can do it. And then we'll talk about him again later, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's gonna be a conversation we have a little bit later, especially because I think that for me early on, he might be getting, you know, the nod for most improved Napoli player from last year. But, you know, it wasn't sandwiched between these two big wins. We did go to the Jay Stadium this past weekend. We get an early goal from Mertens. We play maybe 15 to 20 minutes of great football. And then, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo really, in my opinion, made El Cid Hisai his target this match, and he made him look really bad. I think, you know, obviously this is Ronaldo's best game as a part of Juventus. Mario Mandzukic, who, man, I just don't like at all, scores twice against us. And, you know, we do come away after the early hopes of maybe getting another win back-to-back at the Jay Stadium. We lose 3-1. Disappointing a little bit for me. I thought Mario Rui, you know, was exploited a little bit. First yellow card he got, maybe not warranted, but he gets a second yellow and then a concurrent red, obviously. And we did have our chances. I thought, you know, Zielinski hit the post early. Cajon obviously had a huge chance at the end of the game before it went to 3-1 to tie it at 2-2. Thoughts on the performances? Rafa, I'll start with you.
Well, you know, it was a decent performance from the first 20 minutes, like we've all mentioned. Like, I mean, it was apparent. You know, we got the early goal, which was great. I thought this was going to be one of those games where we just like surprised the world and shut them down. But you know, Juve's might came through, and you know, I wasn't as impressed with Ronaldo's performance than everyone else was, you know, aside from the couple of, you know, assists he had or the shot that was saved and then, you know, parried off. I was more impressed with Mandzukic and the fact that anytime there's a big match, this guy finds a net somehow, some way, and you know, he really for me was the best player on the field both ways. But you know, heartbreak, it sucked, but I'm happy that we got this fixture out of the way early instead of with four matches left like last season, because now, you know, we have to play against them in San Paolo in January. And, you know, we should have a pretty smooth calendar when it comes to Serie A from here on out. So, you know, disappointed, but not overly, you know, dejected, because at the end of the day, we're still in second, and we're not a mile behind Juve. Although I do think Juve can run away with the Scudetto this season.
Kirsten?
I don't like to say I hate Napoli players, so I'll just say I really, my dislike for Rui is growing, and I cannot wait for Gullum to be back, please. I mean, even before he got that second yellow, he was driving me crazy with his... I mean, he's a little dirty, which can be good, but he took it too far, and he kept getting pulled out of position, and I just felt like I couldn't take my eyes off him, and not in a good way, because he was irritating me so much by not being where he should and not doing what he could do to try to stop this breakdown from happening. Ugh. Sorry, rant over.
Yeah, I think on the flanks is where we lost this match, and that's I think it became apparent during the match. Hisai, I thought Rui was bad, but I thought Hisai was worse, only because I just kept seeing him get exploited over and over and over again in the match. And once Ronaldo picked out that mismatch, I mean, or Allegri, whoever you want to give the credit to, they really made it. They really made Hisai look poor, and I thought that Mario Rui again. You're on a yellow, man. You gotta have your head about you. And the tackle that he gets the second yellow on is one of those ones where you're just like, why are you doing this? You know that the referee is gonna pull out another yellow card, and he gets just sort of out of his head a little bit. And when that happens, we all just sort of get really tight in the chest. And there he goes. He gets the second yellow card. I know there was some talk that Ospina maybe could have done better on a couple of these, but I also thought Juve got lucky, especially on that second goal. Ronaldo takes a shot. Ospina just can't push it around the post, and then it just takes a perfect deflection back to Mandzukic, and that's how they take the lead at 2-1. I thought after that we looked a little deflated, to be honest, as well. Marco, what'd you see?
I got to agree with you in terms of Cristiano Ronaldo, just because for me, he was the biggest difference in this game. And that's why Juventus brought him, right? I mean, it wasn't for Serie A, they brought him for Champions League, but he showed why, to me, he's the best player on the planet still. In terms of Mandzukic, I don't know how you hate him. I know he wears the wrong colors. No, I mean it. Like, he wears the wrong jersey and he wears the wrong colors, but I actually got a lot of respect for him. One, for the charity work he does and everything he's done. And I also think he's really, really underrated. Juventus stole him from Atletico Madrid. I know he had a bad year over there, but he, whether he's playing out wide, whether he's playing as the center forward that he should be playing, he's an absolute beast. And he showed that in the World Cup, and he showed that against us, and it was frustrating. And I also think that what's being overlooked is, and I don't want to sound biased because I know we are, but I try not to be. I think Bonucci should have been sent off the pitch. I think anytime a headbutt, you know what I mean? Like, anytime there's a clear headbutt in motion, and yeah, don't get me wrong, Alan definitely made the most of it. Anytime there's a clear headbutt in motion, you got to send the guy off the field. And the fact that Alan also got a yellow card on that was frustrating. But again, you know what? Juventus probably deserved 3 points. I think Napoli, for about 40 minutes of that game, the opening 20, and about immediate 15, 20 minutes before the goal, the third goal anyways, when Napoli went a man down, I think they were the better team on the pitch. And if Kaye Hohn scores on that opportunity, it's a very different game. So it was frustrating that he couldn't take advantage of that, especially because I got a whole lot of crap from Juve fans for including him in a hypothetical combined 11 I came up with. But he showed yesterday why he is so valuable to this team. And in terms of Mario Rui, Kirsten, I know you can't stand the guy. I think he's reckless. I think he can be frustrating to watch. But with that said, yesterday, and again, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, when he's playing an advanced role, when you give him that opportunity, he can attack, but he's such a reliability and he's so frustrating. But you know what? It is what it is. And I don't think we had a chance at the Scudetto to begin with. So 6 points of a gap is going to be really, really tough to overcome. But it's not impossible. And Napoli's schedule does get a whole lot easier going forward. So touch wood, they can get points against the teams they should be getting points against.
Yeah. And just to go back to the Bonucci incident, I was on Serie A sit down this week. And we did talk about the incident there. And, you know, the way I feel about it is this. Bonucci instigates before the headbutt. He sort of pushes Alan with his arm slash elbow, and then Alan just sort of like flicks him away and starts talking or yakking or whatever, and then that's when Bonucci comes back with the headbutting motion. And for me, you know, that's sort of the ticker for me that has to be a red card. You know, he initiates the altercation, and then after Alan sort of retaliates, the secondary retaliation is to headbutt him. And, you know, obviously, Margo, you said it, and I agree, Alan makes a little bit of a meal of it, maybe. But, you know, if your intention is to headbutt an opposing player, you need to be sent off. And I'm not going to try to bang the drum here a little bit, but it wasn't the only suspect call that didn't go our way. I know Chiellini had a handball earlier in the game that wasn't called. Alexandro blasted through Hisai going at a, you know, towards a touchline, and there was nothing there either. But, I mean, like I said, I'm going to try not to beat the drum too hard, but it's sometimes it's a little difficult when you see these things happen, especially when, you know, it's late in the game and we're already down a man, that these things don't get sort of, you know, not necessarily reciprocated, but, you know, you have to see the guy give a headbutting motion and send him off the pitch. And
sorry to interrupt you, but you know what, even in terms of Ronaldo, and I get he's Cristiano Ronaldo, but he scored twice after offside goal, like after the offside was called, and he put the ball in the back of the net. Okay, you know what, one's fine, but the second time, you got to give the guy a card for that. And that probably wasn't going to change the outcome of the game, but you also can't get intimidated, and refs can't get intimidated by the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo's playing in Serie A. He doesn't need any help. He is the best player in the world. You know.
Well,
what I mean?
Frank from Serie A sit down would call that Juve privilege. And I think that Cristiano Ronaldo added to Juve just intensifies that theory of Juve privilege. I mean, you know, how dare you pull your yellow card out to Cristiano Ronaldo because he took a shot after the offside flag was raised? You know, how dare you do that? So I'm sure referees are looking into how Cristiano is treated here. You know, and like you said, Marco, it's not necessarily it wasn't a game changer. It's not like the calls that they got, you know, that they didn't get, you know, called for, like the non-calls would have changed the outcome at all. But I mean, come on. And then Koulibaly gets a yellow card for basically doing his job against Ronaldo. You know, I don't know. It ticks me off that it, you know, just because Ronaldo's on Juve, you know, now he's got this treatment in Serie A. I just, you know, and I don't want to hear he didn't know it was offside. He took a shot maybe 4 seconds after the whistle was blown and the flag was raised. And Alan was visible, too. He went to the ref. You could see him put his two fingers up saying, that's twice now. What the heck? You know what I'm saying? It's BS if you ask me.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think another big piece of news that comes out of this game is, and I know at least a couple of us have touched on it on Twitter, is racist chants against Napoli and also Kalidou Koulibaly during the match, that retroactively the discipline given down by the FIGC was one match of the Corva Sud, I believe, is going to be closed. You know, personally, I think that that's a load of bunk. You could see during the match Insigne go over to the referee and say, hey, do you hear what they're saying? Can you take some sort of action? And the referee sort of gives him that, like, pointed finger across, just telling him to sort of be quiet. And, you know, the Curva Sud being closed is fine, but, Marco, I know you said it on Twitter, and then I sort of reiterated that this is just not punishment enough, and this happens every single time we go to Turin, and they're not the only club that does it. The only place that's been guilty of it. But until the league or the association starts handing out either heftier fines or points deductions, the clubs will happily take the one match closure of the Corva, in my opinion. I think it's absolute garbage. I don't know how y'all feel about it, but that's just my piece.
No, I think it's disgusting. And you know what, again, it's not just Juventus, and I don't want to just harp on them because it's not just their fans. And I actually got into a fight with an argument with a Napoli fan on Twitter saying, listen, Napoli fans can be just as bad sometimes in some of the things they say and some of the things they do. So by no means are Napoli fans immune to this or innocent of this, because we see this all the time, all over, not just Italy and Europe. And until leagues and until UEFA really gets hard on this, you're going to consistently see that. And we're in 2018, so nobody deserves to be treated like that. Nobody deserves to be insulted like that. And there really needs to be a hard stance taken, because, yeah, imagine Juventus had to forfeit the match. Imagine they had to do that. Do you think those fans would ever do that again? I mean, probably they'd probably protest for a good year after, but you would never see them do that again. And that's the only way to really stop this. And you know what? You say at the beginning of the year, yeah, points to, okay, you know what? Three points or 2 points, whatever the case is, because that's the only way that you're really going to stop this. And again, that needs to go Italy-wide.
Yeah.
And it should be European-wide as well. So,
or maybe even like a three-match stadium ban, you know, like behind closed doors. Well, you know, gone are the days where you see that. I mean, I can remember watching Napoli and Serie B with no fans because of the stuff that they used to do, you know? I mean, and I know you say, Marco, that you know, Napoli fans have done and said stupid things in the past, but honestly, lately, have you heard anything racist from their camp? I mean, you know, football, the football world in general raises this anti-racism banner, yet, you know, they do nothing really to punish the fans that are, you know, a little 10,000 euro fine, a slap on the wrist, as Darren would mention, because he's always posting on Facebook how, you know, it's just a slap on the wrist. They'll never learn. Give him a 3-point deduction. I say give him like a 3-5 stadium match ban where you can't have fans in there, no tickets, no sales. Everybody gets hurt. You know, that's just something that's gotta be, you know, if you're going to tote the anti-racism line, then you should be able to hand out proper punishments.
Agreed. I agree 100%. I think that, you know, I feel like we've talked about this maybe in the past, but yeah, until, you know, harsher punishment is brought down, that, you know, this, you know, barely a slap on the wrist is not going to make for any positive change in any way. I really don't think that's the case. But, you know, either way, you know, Napoli come out of this match 6 points behind Juventus. I do think, you know, this is just my opinion here, but I think 15 out of 21 is not a bad start to the season. New manager, a lot of, you know, change in tactics and all the rest. And, you know, we do find ourselves in a better position than some of the other teams that were, you know, touted to be, you know, much improved this year. I know Inter has gotten it together the last couple weeks. And are starting to creep back up the table, but, you know, we could be much worse off. I think that Carlo has started us off pretty well in the season. We've had a really, really, really rough stretch to start with the teams we've had to play. And I think the schedule does start to, I mean, Champions League notwithstanding, we do have a back-to-back with PSG coming up. But I think in the league anyway, we start to, you know, maybe take the gas off a little bit as far as the hard fixtures are concerned. You know, we have Roma at the end of the month, which I will be attending. It'll be my first Napoli match in person, and I can't wait. So, yeah. the guys on Serie A sit down, talk to me a little bit about that. But, you know, I think I'll leave the floor open for y'all to talk where we are in the league after 7 matches. But I'm pretty happy so far.
Yeah, I'm thrilled, actually, because – And mostly because of the fact that all these pundits had us, you know, finishing 5th, 6th, 7th in the league, for us to be, you know, one of the most consistent, behind Juve, of course, but most consistent teams as far as results go. You know, I mean, bar the Sampdoria match, I think that we're in pretty good shape. And like you said, the schedule gets a little bit easier now. I mean, Sassuolo, you know, had a great start to the season, but they were just exposed by Milan 4-1 last week, so at home. So I think this week should be a good week, especially on the heels of what happened yesterday. We'll talk about we should be in good spirits and ready to go.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I think we're in a good situation right now. I mean, listen, I had Napoli finishing third coming into this season. I didn't think that. I thought they would take a little bit of a step back just because I thought it would take a little bit more time to gel under Ancelotti, and I wasn't quite sure what he wanted to do going into this campaign. But he's been able to steady this ship and do so in a very, very timely manner. And Napoli, like we keep alluding to, has had a very, very difficult start to this season. I mean, yeah, they've lost two games, but one, they made a whole lot of substitutions against Sampdoria that weren't really necessary considering they were going into that international break. But Ancelotti and Carlo knew that this was going to help this team in the long run, and we're seeing that pay off. That Juventus game, yeah, it sucks to lose, but they weren't embarrassed. They played well, and you know what? They could have come out of that game with a result if things had gone a little bit more their way. And again, you beat Liverpool yesterday. So Napoli's in a good situation. I think they're going to fight it out with Inter for that second spot. I mean, whether they finish second or whether they finish third won't really matter. We'll see what this club can do in competitions like the Champions League, like the Coppa Italia, and whether this team can get out of that group. And we're going to talk about the Champions League shortly, but if Ancelotti could get this team out of that group and back into and potentially into a quarterfinals or whatever the case may be, and get us back into the Champions League next year, then I think he's done his job, and I think they're going to be that much further ahead for next year. But we got to look and take it one day at a time, and let's just hope that Ancelotti can again get this side to take advantage of the teams that they should be beating further down the schedule.
Yeah, I think I always thought of this as a learning year sort of thing. So I have no disappointment as to what's going on right now, because like you all seem to say, we're learning what Carlo can do. Carlo is more importantly learning what the team can do, and we're going to build on this. And it's not like one and done, you know, he didn't come in for a season and then we have to start over again. You know, this is a long-term sort of thing, and it's making me feel confident of where we will be past the end of what, May. Yeah, May. So I'm pleased.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way our next five Serie A matches shake out, you know, home against Sassuolo, at Udinese, home against Roma, home against Empoli, and at Genoa. So definitely a little bit of ease on the schedule. And, you know, just to sort of echo what y'all said, I really do think that, you know, this is a sort of learning experience and a sort of slow integration. And Frank from Serie A Sit Down likes to use the term that Ancelotti is massaging his tactics into this team slowly. and that's sort of what's happening. And, you know, I think his ability to recognize players' strengths and how to use them is a really big difference between him and Sadi. And I wrote about that when I spoke to the guys from This Is Anfield last week going into our Champions League match, which was yesterday. Huge Champions League match at the San Paolo. 40,000-ish was the attendance. And, you know, big European midday experience at the San Paolo. And we did not disappoint, I don't think. Sort of taking some of the points we talked about with Mario Rui. What does Carlo do this week? He gives us sort of this hybrid 4-4-2, 3-5-2, and lets Mario Rui, you know, be more of a forward-moving wing-back/fullback, and he brings in Nikola Maksimovic to sort of play right-back/right-center-back in a three-man defense, and it played dividends. It paid dividends. I thought that we really, and I'm not going to use the word humbled because we only won the game 1-0, but we neutralized a Liverpool team that I think is going to fight for a Premier League title this year, and took the teeth out of their attack and really controlled the game. You know, we obviously get the late winner from Insigne. A beautiful pass from Callejon to set it up. I mean, it's inch perfect, and Insigne slides in to tap it home very late on. But I think overall, this is a very, very positive experience in Europe. It's really sort of the antithesis to what we saw last year, where, you know, we sort of, before the season even started, sort of just gave up on Europe. And this year, you know, you can see the way Carlo has been integrating all the players, it makes us ready at any given time in any game to play almost anyone. So I will leave it open for anybody who wants to jump in, but obviously a huge win yesterday at the San Paolo.
Napoli dominated yesterday. And I don't mean to, no, and it's the truth. It's they absolutely went there and dominated at the San Paolo, and it was frustrating that they couldn't score earlier because they had the opportunities, but you know what, sometimes the ball doesn't bounce your way. And yesterday we keep talking about Carlo Ancelotti, and I know he's a big name and all this, but he showed why he is still one of the best on the planet. He dominated Klopp. That's what it was. It was a tactical masterpiece. He went out there, and Klopp admitted before the game when the lineups were announced that he didn't know whether it was a back three or a back four. He was still a little bit confused, and it was genius what they did. You know, Ancelotti reverted to a back four to defend. Going forward, he played with a back three because, you know, Liverpool's front and attack is so dangerous and so quick. So that way you have that extra support. Maximovic is there to ensure that that counterattack isn't going to necessarily just blow by them. And Maximovic, and you know, Kirsten talked about it earlier, he showed why he is so good and what he means to this club. And he was a guy that Sarri just threw out the window. So what we're seeing here with Ancelotti is play to his opponents. They're still going to play their style in the way they want to play, but they're also playing to their opponent's strengths and weaknesses, and that's what we didn't see under Sarri. We loved the football. It was beautiful. It was brilliant, and we can't complain about it, but at the same time, it was predictable afterwards. Teams knew what they were doing, right? You didn't have to worry. I mean, you had to worry about what they were capable of, but you didn't have to worry about being surprised. And that's what we're seeing with Ancelotti. So Napoli deserve, honest, and Ancelotti deserves a ton of credit. And if the highlight of the game was Mertens hitting the bar and Insigne doesn't score, we would be talking about Napoli here with 2 points after dominating two of their opening their first two Champions League matches, right? Because if they don't score in the 90th minute, they've got 2 points, and it's very bleak looking forward ahead of two games against PSG. So, Insigne comes in to save the day, but credit Mertens for that assist, that play to Caillon, credit him for the beautiful ball, and this team, credit them because they should have 6 points. They only have 4, but regardless, they're top of the group right now, so I think we could all be smiling.
Well,
agreed.
You got one of us that is a little bit questioning your analysis if they should have 6 points, but you know, we are on a Napoli podcast and not a Zvezda podcast, so I'll be quiet. Here's something interesting and also demonstrating why I don't trust who scored. They made Rui their man of the match.
Rui was the worst player scored on the field yesterday, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
He was reckless, yeah. But at least he, going forward, he provided some, like, he showed why he can be useful.
Yeah, but it was scary.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying he played bad yesterday, but he was definitely not the best player on the field at all. No way.
I mean, we're going to really dice down a great performance, but in my opinion, the worst player on the pitch, and I'm going to get blasted for this, was Matic Hamsik. And I only say that because he started the game off well, and then as soon as the second half started, the errant passes and, you know, mistakes in judgment started to happen. And I feel like Marek is slowly at this point. At this point, he needs to be someone who comes off the bench and injects you for the last 30 minutes, as opposed to someone who starts the match. And I hate saying it because it hurts my own feelings. I'm hurting my own feelings by saying it. But I think that, you know, I posed the question on Twitter last week, and I did get flamed for a little bit. But it's how long is Matic Hamsik's starting spot safe for when you have players, in my opinion, knocking at the door to come in? I mean, it's interesting. But I thought that overall the performance was great. I thought, like you said, Marco, it was an absolute Carlo masterclass. He threw a curveball in when the lineups were announced and Liverpool couldn't adjust. Obviously, they had an injury concern early on in the game. Naby Keita, I know he was sent to the hospital to be observed, so hopefully he's okay. But I don't think that was the reason why they were played off the pitch. Honestly, they didn't get one shot on target, which I saw on Twitter some stat, like it's the first time in over 3 years or 2 years that that Klopp's Liverpool was held without a shot on target. So very impressive performance.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I want to go back to Sarri real quick. There people are saying that we wouldn't have won that match with Sarri. I think that Sarri's decision to go with just the Scudetto last season and then not come away with it was, you know, obviously disappointing. But you know, I think he's being defined whether it's right or wrong by the decision to drop the Champions League, because when you look at Sarri's performances in Europe before that, you see a Napoli who basically pretty much set a Europa League record in the group stage. Granted, it's the Europa League, and it's a much easier tournament with teams like Michelin, Bruges, and Warsaw, you know. But we were 6 wins, 18 full 18 points, 22 goals for, 3 against, and then we go and lose to Villarreal. But then we win the group with Benfica, Besiktas, and Dinamo, and then, you know, put out a really good performance against Real Madrid, you know, the way we did, even though we lost 6-2 on aggregate. His decision to drop the Champions League last year is gonna leave a lasting effect on people who are against Sarri and his work and his antics, and then a guy coming in like Ancelotti, you know, with such European prestige, will you know, just kind of intensify that. But I don't think Sarri was that bad in Europe, besides last season. But
I don't. For me, it's not that Sarri was necessarily bad in Europe, but I feel like we've talked about it a little bit. Is the thing that separates really great tactical coaches, as far as, you know, the X's and O's go on paper, and what makes great coaches is the ability to adapt and change up your style a little bit. And I feel that, and I keep using this term over and over again, that, you know, the change this year goes from someone who is, Sarri's strengths were to be able to make certain players very way better by adapting them to his system. And what Ancelotti does is sees players' strengths and then adapts the team's system to each individual player and tries to help everybody succeed. It's fascinating to me, the difference, because it couldn't be any more different. I think if we, you know, there are other managers we could have gone with that maybe would have kept very similar styles, but Ancelotti really does find, you know, the little bits in every single player that he can fit to his squad. I mean, even looking at a players like Adam Unas, and I think even a player like Malcui comes in, and, you know, he's someone who goes forward. I mean, we've started, I think aside from Unas, we've started every single healthy player in the team so far this season.
We have, yes.
And we're only, you know, 7 games in or whatever it is, and, you know, 9 games in if you count the Champions League. But it's a very interesting sort of breakdown between the two coaches.
Exactly. And what I was ultimately trying to get at was, even though Sarri's one bad European season, you know, was last season, even though he coming off the heels, if Sarri is our coach this year, you are never going to see Maksimović in that starting lineup yesterday. No. You are never going to see, you know, even Milik in that starting lineup. I think he would have gone with the tried and trusted, like we branded Classic 11, and they'd been so tired that we would have gotten run off the park yesterday. And just the way Ancelotti came in and, you know, worked his magic and did his thing, I truly, that and the San Paolo was roaring, and I was fully expecting us to come back from the first half and just kind of like shit the bed like we usually do. But we were better in the second half than we were in the first half. And it's funny because my cousin posted after the match, instead of like Grande Victoria, which he usually does, he posted better second half of Grande Napoli. And then we have a mutual friend from England who she's a Juve fan from London, and she wrote, I didn't get to see the end. What was the score? And when I chimed in and said 1-0, she goes, geez, the way Liverpool fans are going off, I thought you guys gave them a hiding. And then I had to explain to her, well, we really did. We did give them a hiding.
Yeah, they didn't have a look the whole match.
No, they really didn't. And then when they did, I want to say this too. I thought Ospina was brilliant.
Agreed. I was going to mention this.
He came through, and I'll tell you, that's why we got him, is because he can perform in those big matches like he does with Colombia and like he did yesterday. I was so happy with him yesterday.
I was astonished.
Yeah, I think what you're seeing these guys start to get a little bit more comfortable too. I felt that we would have some growing pains at goalkeeper, and I mean, when he came off the off the line yesterday and made that sort of sweeper keeper tackle, I watched the game last night, so I didn't get up out of my seat, but I was. I was super impressed.
I was on the edge of my seat. Never mind.
It's the only bummer about not watching live. I knew what happened. So, and then, but yeah, it was.
I'm all over the place.
You're still bouncing out of your seat aren't you?
I'm recounting. Rafa's jazz. I'm recounting where I was yesterday, and there was this one Koulibaly. Brilliant, like flash of brilliance yesterday, where he slid in and took the ball from I want to say it was Salah, and just slid in and grabbed it and popped right back up, and I think that was the play.
I'm not gonna lie, that made me nervous, dude. Because he was already
on a yellow, but what a beautiful piece of artistry. And then that was the play that led to the Milik shot that was saved by Alisson, where he had to like pop it up in the air and then grab it. But what a beautiful sequence that was! I was just so proud of the team, the whole team. You know, notwithstanding my dislike for Rui as well, but I mean he lost the ball for us a few times, but even there were times where he even put the ball in and we came close. I think he was the guy who, I think he made the cross into Mertens where Mertens blasted the crossbar. But I mean, just the, and you guys have seen the video because I posted it to Sempre and it made the Bleacher Report. That was raw live. I was on Twitter live. That was live emotion right there, man. And that was, it's the second group stage of the Champions League, and we're in October, and I'm already like teared up by this team beating Liverpool, because I mean Liverpool, you know, to me, like I mentioned, is one of the scariest teams on the planet, and we did what we did to them, and it was just a magical night for me. One I don't think I'll forget for a while.
Listen, Liverpool didn't have a shot on net yesterday, and a shot on target, and that fails to get the notice that it deserves, because we saw what this team was capable of against Chelsea on the weekend, mm-hmm. right? You give them one opportunity, Sturridge equalizes, right? And Ancelotti understood that Napoli needed to suffocate Liverpool in attack if they were going to have any chance to win this game, and that's what they did. And honestly, Salah looked normal. This team looked human. And this has been a very, very good Liverpool side and a team that does have an opportunity to win a Premier League, and they might not make it out of this group. I mean, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Napoli, we've got two very, very difficult games against PSG coming up, but they're in a situation where, you know what, you go to Anfield, you get a draw, you beat Red Star and you beat PSG in one of those games, you're through. So yeah. I think things are looking on the up and up, especially considering that they drew in that opening game that they really did need to get 3 points in.
It's that classic roller coaster of game to game for the Champions League. I feel like, you know, every single match changes complexion so much. We come into this match, you know, we're on 1 point. It's kind of a bummer. We thought PSG and Liverpool were going to draw. You know, Liverpool gets a late winner in that one. And, you know, we come out the other side of match day two, and all of a sudden we're on the top of the group. So it's, I think everybody should be proud of the performance. And I thought, you know, a couple of my personal standouts from yesterday's match, I thought Maximovic personally was
fantastic.
He wasn't man of the... He was fantastic. I gave man of the match to Alan because, you know, I mean, I don't know what else I could. I don't know. There's not enough superlatives for the way that he plays. you know, he just does everything you can possibly ask for a midfielder. He covers every blade of grass on the whole pitch. But I thought Maksimović was extremely impressive, and I thought what Carlo did to sort of put him in a comfortable spot in sort of that attacking 3-5-2, it's where he used to play for Torino, and you know, having three center backs to be able to go man to man for the three, you know, that three-headed attack of Liverpool was played perfectly, and I thought that we were able to push up high enough that we were able to neutralize the midfield and then press high enough that we kept their fullbacks back. So it was an amazing performance. We're on the top of the group, and I guess we're going to toss it up now to just, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I'm going to, you know, ask everybody who, you know, about 10 competitive matches into the season is our standout performer so far. I will start with you, Kirsten.
I don't know about standout performer, but I don't think we've given enough love to Callejon yet tonight. I mean,
I agree.
We keep touching on him and then we back away. But oh my, obviously we have the little Juventus incident. But he's doing fantastically, and he's doing fantastic, and he's doing it, you know, maybe not quite as quietly as some of us like to proclaim that, you know, underrated, overlooked. He seems to be getting a bit more looked at. But he's just, you know, he's doing what he's supposed to do, and he's doing it beautifully, and almost all the time it seems to be working out. So he's the one that I'm loving right now.
Marco.
It may not be the sexiest pick. It may almost be an obvious choice, but honestly, for me, it's got to be Koulibaly again. Because you can't tell me a team in Europe, a team on the planet, whether it's national or club, that this guy wouldn't get in the starting 11 of. He's an absolute beast as a center back, and he is so pivotal to this team, and he shows that every week. And you know what? He showed that again yesterday. You know, I thought he did well against Ronaldo when they were one-on-one with each other. You know, there was that one incident with Ronaldo trying to dance around him, and Ronaldo just stood his ground. I mean, sorry, Koulibaly just stood his ground, and we see week in, week out why he is so important to whether it's Ancelotti or Sarri before him or Benitez before that. He is just so crucial to this club, and he's the one player year in, year out that we cannot afford to lose, and he's just a pillar. He really, really is.
Rafa.
Well, Marco stole mine. I was going to go with Koulibaly. but honestly, as we were pretty much segueing to it, I had two names in my head, and so I'm going to have to go with Insigne, because 6 goals in his first 8 matches of the season. Or is it 9 now? Lost count. But he scored the most goals that he has since, you know, in to a start of the season. And I really feel like Ancelotti coming in saying that he's wanted to work with Insigne for a while. Now he is. Him making him the focal point of the team. Him being from Naples. Him getting that, like, you know, I heard the midweek Stereo Serie A Champions League edition earlier today. Marco, you guys talked about how, you know, if there was a dream scenario, what would it be? You know, and it would definitely have been yesterday at Insigne, because 90th minute, you know, off of great performance, but just couldn't find the net. And, you know, you're in the Champions League in São Paulo for your home club, a club that you've supported forever. And now you get to play for and is the focal point of wearing the captain's armband. To me, it doesn't get much better than that. And I think that it was just like the moment for him. But as far as the whole season goes, I really do think Insigne has been such a pivotal part of the squad, not only on the pitch, but in a leadership role. As Hamsik comes off or doesn't get a start, he gets the captain's armband. He's unquestionably the next captain for Napoli. And I think we're nothing without him, to be honest with you.
Well, Rafa, you paid it forward, because that was going to be my pick. So I think I'm going to go you know, with someone I mentioned just a couple of minutes ago, and I'm going to go with Alan. You know, everybody I think had good choices, and maybe he's not a, you know, surprise, but I think that his importance to the team in the midfield cannot be underestimated. I think he's one of these players, you know, I think we talk about it every so often, but the fact that Alan has not gotten a cap for Brazil is gotta be a travesty to me. I think that, you know, he proves it week in, week out. He did it yesterday against Liverpool. He does it every week in Serie A. He has a crazy motor. He never stops. He's tenacious. He does everything he's supposed to do. And I think that, you know, maybe, you know, we can rename this section, you know, who's Napoli's MVP so far. I think maybe Alan is our most important player, maybe aside from Insigne. I think the transformation of Lorenzo Insigne is a huge deal. I think it's going to be a huge deal this year. I think Lorenzo gets his first 20 goal season this year.
Absolutely.
If I'm guessing, I think that, you know, he's found consistency in a way that he has never found before. And I think that you're also right, Rafa, that, you know, I feel like he performs maybe even a little better when the armband is on. I think he just, you know, he's obviously hometown boy. And, you know, you saw last night when he scored, he went right to the Curva. So mm-hmm. I think that, you know, maybe sooner than later we will see Insigne with the armband. But that's just my opinion. I know that's another thing I get blasted for, is saying maybe Insigne deserves to be captain. But, you know, we move on to the last segment, I guess, for today is going to be Ask Sempre. We have a fair amount of questions, it looks like, from some pretty regulars and some new ones. So I'll start with Peter Scala at pscala11 on Twitter. A very good question to start. In 5 years, who will be the most important playing on Napoli? Number 24 or number 26?
Mm-hmm.
Marco, I'll start with you.
It's got to be number 24, and it's just because it's Lorenzo, right? Like, at the end of the day, you mentioned how he's going to be the captain of this team if he doesn't wear it regularly now, but when Hamzik's off the field and he's wearing that. We see how important he is to Ancelotti. He's the one of two guys, him and Koulibaly, that played, you know, Torino, Parma, Juve, and against Liverpool. So we see what he means to him and any future coach. And you know what? It's corny and it's been said before, but he is very likely to be Napoli's Francesco Totti. So let's hope he can deliver a Scudetto like Totti did.
Agreed. Kirsten?
I don't think I can say anything better than that. I can't argue that at all. Unfortunately.
Rafa?
I'm not going to argue it, but it's a shame you can't pick both.
Yeah,
you
know, because, that's true. That was a good
because
plan.
Because to be 100, excuse me, to be 100% honest with you, I think Koulibaly is just as important as Insigne is, because without his presence commanding the back line, you know, there's no squad, you know, there's an attack and there's no defense. And I think, I mean, it's funny because Koulibaly, you know, when he first got his start with Napoli, I noticed a little bit of Paolo Maldini meets Lilian Thuram in him, and to be 100% honest with you, my opinion of that hasn't changed a bit. You know, he's such a presence in that back line that that you haven't seen in such a long time. You almost wish he was Italian, you know, because we kind of need the national team really needs something like that, you know.
You're 100%, sorry to interrupt, Rob. You're 100% right, and I think right now, anyways, Koulibaly, and we just talked about how important he was to this team and why I thought that he probably is the most important player on this team right now, but unfortunately, I don't think he's on this team in 5 years from now or 4 years from
That's
now.
That's my other, yeah.
I think Insigne is.
Agreed. Yep.
You can say that, but Napoli will have made a pretty penny off of him then, if that's the case, because...
Absolutely.
Because true.
There's no denying that in 4 or 5 years he'll be worth anything less than at least 100 mil for you know, I mean, age notwithstanding, but you know, for me, he's one of the best center backs in the entire world, and anybody can at me for that. You know, it doesn't.
Uh-oh. Get ready, Rafa.
Don't at me, bro. The whole world.
I'm pretty much in agreement with all of you. It's a great question, Peter, and it's a difficult one to answer because I know we all love both of those players. But I think, I think the edge probably goes to Insigne only because of what Marco said. I think there's a high chance Koulibaly is not here in 5 years. Next question from Francesco at Malik Fan. As a neutral, Insigne has always been an enigma to me. One game outstanding, one game he disappears. Poor against us. He's a Juve fan. On Saturday, ran Liverpool ragged 3 days later. Do you think Ancelotti can inject consistency into his game? I think I'm going to start this one off by saying I think we have seen Insigne the most consistent he's ever been. Highest goal return in his career to start a season. And, you know, the switch from a wing player to a central player has changed things dramatically for me. I think the biggest thing for me with the change for him going from outside to inside is that it's cut down on those errant long ball shots cutting in from his left to his right. Absolutely. That he would balloon over the bar. And I feel like it's put him in these situations to be almost like a true poacher, where he's able to be in these positions where he can just poke him in. And you could see he's got a couple of these, you know, these poacher type goals already this season. So I'm going to say that my answer to this question is we're already starting to see this happen. You know, granted he wasn't the best against Juve, but I think he's been pretty darn consistent. Rafa, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think he's been poor aside from the Juve game, and I don't even know if I want to say he was poor there either. I mean, he's a contributor when he doesn't score goals either. It's not like he doesn't contribute. But isn't it insane how we're talking about Insigne, you know, who's probably one of the shortest Italians on the national team and members of Napoli, as a poacher or an out-and-out striker. It's pretty insane to see. And when you really think about it, Insigne has been one of the most consistent members of the team anyway. So I'm not quite sure, you know, he's as inconsistent as our buddy Francesco deems him to be, just because he saw him against Juve do you know, quote unquote, nothing, and then watch the Liverpool game because Juve had already played the day before, and then saw his masterpiece. And I think it's a little unfair, you know, with all due respect to you, but to say that he's been inconsistent, because you have to watch all the other Napoli games to be able to judge, make that judgment.
Marco.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that this is the most consistent we've seen him, at least for some time. I think why a lot of people are harsh on him, and I got a lot of ridicule for including him again in that combined Juve 11. Granted, it was a UVAFC.com article, so I understand Juve fans, whatever. But he hasn't performed that well for the national team. And I think that's where a lot of this resentment and a lot of this bitterness is coming from, is that he hasn't necessarily shown what he really is capable of or has reached his potential for Italy. And I think that's why a lot of non-Napoli fans tend to be really harsh on him and tend to view him as really inconsistent. And yeah, he didn't have a great game against Juve, but I don't think he was abysmal. I don't think he was atrocious. I don't think he was our worst player on the pitch. But when you watch what he did against Liverpool and you watch what he's done against other teams this year, you question that. But the knock that he doesn't show up in big games, that was, I think, unproven yesterday or disproven yesterday. And I think he really, really is a top player and potentially a world-class player. He does need to find that consistency, though, and I think Ancelotti's utilizing him better than anybody else has before him.
Agreed. Kirsten?
I think that's really unfair, because you three hit all my points that I thought out before this. It was, you only watched Juventus, you watched the national team, and did you not see last night's game? Those were my 3 points, and each of you hit one. Congratulations.
Kirsten, it'll come back around. Okay. Don't worry. You'll get them. They'll all get theirs. next question from Michael Valeriano at FEMike99. His question is, why do you believe there was such a difference in result from Saturday against Juve and yesterday against Liverpool? Tactics, motivation, Juve that much better than Liverpool, or anything else? Kirsten, I'll start with you.
And now I barely heard. Can you repeat that question? Sorry, a cat just attacked me.
The question again is, why do you believe there was such a difference in the result from Saturday against Juventus to yesterday against Liverpool? Tactics, motivation, Juve that much better than Liverpool, or something else?
Is this also from a Juventus fan? I don't think Juve are that much better
This is unconfirmed.
Yeah. I don't think it's as simple as saying it's one of those things. Like we've talked about throughout the pod, we're still growing under Carlo, and it takes time for those things to gel. We've also said that it could have easily been turned around had Callejon's shot gone in. It also might have been a little bit about the fact that it was at the San Paolo last night.
Yep.
So, many things.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of factors. I mean, I think Juve was going to get up for this game because we beat them last time we played there. I think, you know, playing at home against Liverpool is a huge advantage. I think, you know, potentially tactics maybe. I think Carlo really thought about the tactics yesterday, not that he didn't against Juventus, but you know, there was obviously a lot more of playing to the tactics of Liverpool to shut them down. I mean, I think there's a lot of different variables. Rafa, what do you think?
Well, if nobody said Carlo was going to go unbeaten all season, you know, if we're gonna lose a match, I'd rather lose it to Juventus in Serie A match week 7 than to Liverpool in the Champions League. Not that he decided, okay, I'm going to field the weakest possible squad and use the wrong tactics against Juve so that I can save it for Liverpool. I think he spread it out the way he thought he needed to. You know, one would probably look at the lineup that he put out against Juventus, if Sarri was our manager, say, how could we put out that kind of lineup in Serie A with Liverpool coming up on Wednesday? Because it might have been the same exact lineup that he would have used against Juve. But, you know, he did put out as close to a classic 11 lineup as possible, you know, without Jorginho or Pepe. Absolutely. Reina. And you know, Juve have improved with Cristiano Ronaldo and Emre Can and what have you. So I think that if I have to pick a reason why we lost to Juve and came out and beat Liverpool is because I think Juve have, you know, figured out that certain lineup, you know, notwithstanding the fact that we went in front, you know, but you know, it just for me was a little bit too Maurizio Sarri looking for me when I saw what the lineup was. But I thought to myself, you know what, it's probably a different formation. You know, we'll get what we can out of this. But honestly, it's so early in Serie A, and if you told me that we needed to take a loss against Juve to get the win against Liverpool in the Champions League, given the fact that it's so early in the season, I would have done exactly what Ancelotti did, and I wouldn't change a single thing.
Agreed, Marco.
Well, let's first dispel the myth that Napoli were particularly bad against Juve, because that wasn't the case.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, like, Callejon scores on that opportunity, even a man down, all of a sudden it's a 2-2 game, and Napoli come out of there with a point, and it's a very different discussion, right? Football is a game of millimeters sometimes, and we saw if Mertens hit the bar, whatever the case is, but let's say Insigne doesn't score in the 90th minute. All of a sudden, we talk about Napoli being poor against Liverpool too, and that they can't score, whatever the case is. You know, so it is what it is. And you know what? Yesterday, like we keep alluding to, Ancelotti did get his tactics right, but that doesn't mean he got his tactics wrong against Juventus. There was times we allowed them to get back into the game on the weekend against Juventus and gave them that confidence back. But again, the difference in that match was their 117 million euro player and the best player on the planet, Cristiano Ronaldo. Because if that's not Cristiano Ronaldo on the pitch, I don't think Juventus win that match. And maybe somebody else would have stepped up for them and, you know, Douglas Costa was suspended or whatever the case was. But again, I didn't think Napoli were particularly poor. I thought they were a little bit unfortunate. And you know what? Yeah, they didn't take advantage of their opportunities and they paid the price for it. But I don't think they were particularly poor, like I just said.
Yeah, I always think it's hard to look at these games under a microscope like that, right? There's so many seconds or moments in a match that can help decide it, and it's, you know, it's difficult to say. There's I don't think there's any, you know, single reason why we did or didn't get a result. I think, you know, this is football, and this is what happens. You know, we're down a man for 30 minutes against Juventus as well, so there's a lot of different talking points that we can go to on that. But on to the next question, Payman Dadgar, a regular on Es Sempre. He has two questions. One, why did we have empty seats? A bit disappointing. And is Hisai losing his starting spot? And I'm going to just start by saying the reason why we had part of the reason why we had empty seats, and this is classic Napoli, is that a whole bunch of the stores that sell tickets were physically out of the tickets to print, so they couldn't issue tickets for the game. So that is part of the reason why, which is not any less embarrassing. But I also know that the bottom bowl is almost never filled because the sight lines suck and you can't see a damn thing. So I think that's part of the reason too.
Yeah, we used to joke about because it's not too far from, you know, reality that in the 90s and early 2000s you'd probably get hit in the head with something if you sat down there, but we used to joke that that's why nobody ever sits down there is because no one wants to get no one wants to get a can or a bottle hit in the head with a can or a bottle. But honestly, you know, even if they did have tickets available for it, it's because of the sight line. It's a reason why, you know, the track is such a you know a pain in the ass for Neapolitans because it's very very difficult to watch. I know my dad was at the game. Cavani scored a hat trick against Juventus in 2011, I think, or 2012, and he had to sit down in the bottom, and he said it wasn't the best, you know, to be able to see, but he still had the best night of his life that night because that was a special moment, but. But that's pretty much the reason why is because no one could really see anything down there. So you'd almost want to sit up top.
Yeah, I think that pretty much for me, you know, are the two big reasons. I feel like there's very few matches where you see the bottom bowl filled up at all. So second question, is Hisai losing his starting spot? Marco, I'll start with you.
That's interesting. I think he is really, really quality when he was under Sarri, and we haven't necessarily seen that transpire under Ancelotti. We haven't seen the best of him. And, you know, we were afraid to lose him at one point in time. And now the thing is, Napoli have a lot of depth at fullback, and for the first time in a long time, we can say that. You know, for a long time, we were relying on Maggio to, you know, be able to still produce some sort of magic off the bench or be able to fill in when needed. And now you've got options, and, you know, with Luperto coming up through the system as well and getting a chance to play now, we're seeing what he can do. And Malcoué looks incredible, and Rui, as much as we've ragged on him, he does offer something to this club. Mm-hmm. And so Hisai, I don't necessarily know if he's losing his starting spot, but at the same time, I don't know if we even know who the starters are anymore, because Wasari was such a clear and defined 11, and you knew what the strongest lineup was, and it was the same lineup that played week in, week out. With Ancelotti, we don't even know what the lineup looks like game in, game out. And like we were talking about in our WhatsApp group, we were confused when we saw the lineup yesterday. We weren't really sure what he was going with, you know. And so that speaks volumes of the difference of this team and the difference under Ancelotti. So I don't know if he's losing his starting spot, but again, I don't even know if we know who would be in the starting spot or if there are any starters anymore besides Insignia and Koulibaly.
Yeah, agreed. Kirsten?
Mine's kind of a flipping of that. I was going to say, I hope so. And not because I don't like Isaiah, because I absolutely do. But it's more like, I feel we've all seen a little bit of a dip in quality from him this season. And if we really are going with the idea that no one, except those two we just mentioned, has an assured starting spot in this team, then I think that might kick him into gear a little bit, you know? And then hopefully we'll see again that amazing quality that we have seen from him in the past. And then we have him back up to the top of his game. And we have these other great players who can be starters as well. So, yeah, let's hope.
Yeah. Yeah, I think confidence is a big thing. I think motivation from players behind you to perform is another big difference that we see in Ancelotti. Like, you never know, you know, a couple games, if you give a guy an opportunity, could just flip the way that the lineup is going to look. I think he's giving everybody opportunities, and I think it's also smart, given the game that Hisai had against Juventus, just to give him a game to, you know, tactics aside, if he was going to go the way he went anyway. It is what it is, but I think it was smart to just give Hisai a match, maybe just to think and not feel the pressure again after having to face Ronaldo on the weekend, to have to go up against, you know, Mane and Firmino and Salah. And I think that, you know, potentially maybe Malqui could be a starter, but, you know, I think, Marco, you hit the nail on the head for me. We don't know who the starters are. Everybody is a starter, and everybody can sit on the bench, aside from maybe the only person I might add to your two is Alan. I think he's another player that is a on-and-on starter every single week. But, Rafa, anything to add?
Yeah, I think that also the fact that Hussai didn't make a start yesterday, and correct me if I'm off base, guys. If you disagree, let me know. But to me, it seemed like Ancelotti was planning on putting Maximovic on a wing to revert to a sort of a three-man back line when we pressed and attacked, and bring Mario Rui up a little bit, and then fall back to the four when we defended. You know, just in case, you know, there was a quick counter and there was a, you know, Maximovic is more comfortable with a three-man back line with Albiol and Koulibaly back there. But I don't necessarily think that means, Payman, that he's going to lose his starting spot. And like the rest of the guys said here, and girl, obviously, everybody has a chance to start on this team, and everybody has a chance to sit on this team. You know, I don't think Malqui or Luperto are going to replace Usai as a starter quite yet. I think they're still kind of young and still coming into their own, while Usai is basically, you know, almost a veteran on this team now. And I don't think you'll see Maximovic start matches as a fullback, you know, very many times. But I think for the situation yesterday, I think that's what it called for, and it's just the way it happened. And I also know that Kirsten is very excited to be able to see Usai's beautiful hair on the pitch every week too, so...
I swear it's getting puffier. I don't know how.
It also defies gravity. It defies gravity.
It's
yeah. I mean, I think that wraps up the, you know, the Hisai stuff. I think, you know, the crux of it is anybody has a chance to be able to start, and anybody has a chance to sit. Let's see what else we got. I know Massimo Nuzzo has a question for us. What do you make of... We've sort of touched on this, but I'll just throw the question out there in case anyone has anything else to add. What do you make of Maksimovic at right back? I thought it worked really well when Mario Rui pushed up and we played at the back three, essentially.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You are correct.
Two birds, one stone.
Massimo, that's right. Yeah, I mean, it was... Exactly. You know, I wanted to make sure that we included the question. I don't want anybody to feel left out, but... Yes, Massimo, correct.
I want to say happy belated birthday to Massimo as well. He and I talk every now and then on Facebook chat, and I told him I'd shout him out a bit. So, buon compleanno, signor.
Yes, indeed. I think that makes him like, 13. I'm kidding, Massimo, but yeah. And then we have a question from Mr. Frank Sidekick. And I think maybe we did answer this question a little bit. Well, maybe Carlo Ancelotti answered this question yesterday. We seem to be hitting a brick wall when we get into good positions in the opposition half, only for Hisai or Mario Rui to mess things up. Sorry, Frank, I don't have any stats to help. But more broadly, what's the solution, Mercado or tactical tweaks? Well, we saw the tactical tweaks yesterday, which really helped Mario Rui. We haven't seen anything yet for Hisai because he hasn't played yet, but Mercato, I don't know. I don't know if we're going to get another fullback. You know, if Ghulam comes back and is healthy enough, you know, if he performs at 80 to 90% of what he did last year before he got injured, you know, that puts Rui back into a rotational spot, and then you have Luperto who's available if you need him, and then the other side you have Malqui and you have Hisai. So I don't know if I think maybe tactical switches are the answer and maybe not Mercato. Anybody else got anything to add to Frank's question?
No, I don't think Mercato is the answer back there. The only question could be a replacement for Kidikas, but I really think that Albiol, Koulibaly, Maksimovic has it covered. You know, I'm not too worried about it, to be honest with you. And then, like you said, Ghulam will be back soon, so I don't think the Mercato is necessary over there.
Yeah, I agree. Marco, Kirsten, anything to add?
Yeah, I agree.
All right, and one more question here from Elvisuvio99. I have two family members who are Juve fans. How can I disown them without causing a familial rupture? I don't have an answer for that. I don't think hide when they win and blow it in their face when we beat them.
You know what's worse than that, Elvisuvio, is having a family member who's so pro Serie A that when Juve do good, he's happy, and even in Serie A.
Ugh.
So he claims to not be a Juve fan. He claims to be a Napoli fan. He's the only one of the cousins who live in the States that was born in Naples, yet he's the one who is just like, I just don't understand where he comes from. And I get being a fan of the league. I myself have renounced cheering for any other Italian team in Europe this year because of all the racism from last year. I just said to myself, I'm not cheering for a single Italian team in Europe. And the year that they do that, they all win in the same week, which is not all.
Lazio did not win.
See, I didn't know that.
Yep, Lazio lost today 3-1.
As of record time, I was aware of only the Milan win. I didn't know that. But, you know, okay, in the Champions League anyway. But, so Elvisuvio, I have to deal with especially the last two seasons before this one, when Higuain would score in the Champions League, he would just drive us batshit crazy with it, and it was awful, and it still continues to this day. So a Napoli fan, so-called Napoli fan, cheering for Juventus is even worse. So, I mean, at least you have two family members who are tried and true Juve fans. I think I'd respect that even more if this guy just came out and said, I'm a Juve fan.
Oh, boy. Well, I don't know. I don't have anything else to add to that. I don't know if y'all have any familial stories of fans of different clubs. No one else in my family watches Calcio.
My partner's a Fiorentina fan, but, you know, that only was a real issue last season. That fateful April game.
Oh, boy. Marco, any experience with, you know, family you have to strangle or anything?
No, you know what? Actually, my father-in-law is a Milan fan, but he's a gentleman, actually. He's a really, really good guy. And my wife has learned that there's only one team that gets represented in this house. And she knows that that's Napoli. And we went to a couple of games on our honeymoon. So, Ken, I know you're going to have an awesome time when you experience the San Paolo. It's eye-opening. It's really, really cool. It's surreal. And it breaks your heart all in one. So, you know what? Have an awesome time. Enjoy it over there. And Forza Napoli.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, that's what you can tell your family, El Vesuvio, is Forza Napoli. He does have a second question. It's any chance we get to see Big Mac get more starts? Yeah, I think so. I feel like Maximovic has come up a bunch in this podcast. But yeah, I think we've touched on this pretty heftily. I think everybody's going to get starts, and I think Maximovic has proven himself in the last week. You know, he's gotten two starts against Parma and one start against Parma, one start against Liverpool, and he's performed well in both. So I don't see any reason why not.
Yeah, I mean, Ken, you and I came on, Ken, 2 weeks ago now, I think, was the last time we recorded, or a week ago or so, and we touched on the fact that Maximovic just hasn't had a chance to get in there, and whether it be in training or just Sadi and his madness, we were sitting there thinking we were wasting money on Maximovic just sitting there. One of the most exciting players to come on when he did come on from Torino, because he was such a great defender there, and I don't think he got his due with Sadi at the helm, and now that Ancelotti's here, we'll definitely see him a lot more.
Agreed. Kirsten, Marco, anything else about Maximovic?
I think that one was just directed to me, and of course I say absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we've said all that needs to be said about Maximovic, and our thoughts throughout the show, because we know how valuable he really is now to this team.
Yeah, I agree. I really think he's gonna come good on the price tag we paid a couple seasons ago. I really do. But thanks everybody for the questions on Es Siempre. We're going to just do a quick little roundup here, some housekeeping notes. As you probably have noticed by listening, James is not on the podcast today. He regrettably had to resign. He has, a family. He's trying to focus on that. And, I know that I can say personally that, James gave me an opportunity to come on here and voice my thoughts and give me a platform to talk to a bunch of people that I would have otherwise probably not met or heard from or, had the chance to reach out to. And I can't thank him enough for that. And same. I know that we will miss him. Doesn't quite feel exactly the same without him. But, I just want to say thanks to James and the opportunities. And, I'll leave the floor open to anybody else who wants to, chime in.
Yeah, James, as the, longest tenured Sempre member now that James is gone and Darren, who he started with, was gone before, and now I want to say the same. It's a dream of mine to do what we're doing right now, even if it's just for fun, even if it's just for kicks, kill time, hobby, whatever. Or even if something comes from it, this literally what we're doing right now has been a dream of mine since I was a kid. People would ask, or pretty much tell me you should go into sports casting or journalism or something like that. When I was a kid, and maybe you can be one of the first to talk about soccer and Napoli and Serie A on the airwaves, and obviously many people have surpassed have become the catalyst to do it, but James had the idea to create a podcast because it wasn't around. you know, nothing in English for this team especially. And when he, I'll never forget the day he asked me to come on permanently, and you know, I was ecstatic to do it. And because of him, he you know, we're here doing what we're doing. And I just hope everything's okay with James and everything is okay with the family. And you know, he's a hard worker and he's a devoted father and he's a pretty good person. And I just want him, I want nothing but the best for him and for his Rangers as well.
Yeah, James, I think we all definitely wish the best for you if you're listening. Yeah, hope you really enjoy this time with your family because, as was just said, you seem to be a completely devoted father, and it's great that you'll have this time to really be with them as, well, I don't want to say names, I almost said names, as your child grows up and you can take care of her, and that's the most important thing for you to be doing right now.
Yeah, and if it hadn't been for James, I would have never met any of you guys. So, thanks, James.
Yeah, you know, I think that pretty much says, you know, a lot of, you know, what James did for us and giving us an opportunity and a platform, and you know, we can't take any of that away from him. So, honestly, thank you, James. We will follow that up with another of our co-hosts here who has stepped away. Frank will. Unfortunately, maybe besides, maybe we can sneak him on for a guest appearance every now and then, but we will miss our Stephen Merchant of the podcast with his smooth English stylings. And I know Frank will be listening to this, so I know that he will appreciate that. But and I know that we'll all be chatting with him till he, still. He's obviously on the first Ask Sempre that he wasn't a co-host for, so, you know, not really, you know, the same type of adieu to Frank, but, you know, I know I'll miss talking to him on a, you know, weekly or biweekly basis.
Yeah, Frank is Frank and I, along with James, we pretty much carried the summer out. You know, we did we had our dynamic duo, you know, co-host duties in the summertime, and it was so much fun. We had a lot of laughs, and he's such a cool person to talk to. He's so knowledgeable about the team and about the game itself, and I'm really, really thankful to be able to have talked to him. And I know he it's funny because when James put him on the show, he was gaga for it. Like he kind of revered us as rock stars. Kenny, you
yes.
Yes. You remember one of the first episodes he was on with us right before we started, we went on air. He was just kind of giddy. I'll never forget that. But you know, we're just a couple regular guys, man, just like you, Frank, and you know, I did ask him when he made the announcement to us on chat I hope he would still be able to contribute as a writer on the site, because his stuff was just amazing, and
yeah, he will,
and I love reading his pieces. So Frank, I hope everything's okay with you too, and you know, we'll miss you too, but I'll probably message you in a little while.
Oh boy. Yeah, so I mean, sort of in lieu of those things, you know, I think that the four of us have come together and decided that, you know, without James specifically, and, you know, Frank as well, and without Darren being as involved as he was anymore, that, you know, it was time for sort of a new identity and a new name. So I think, you know, so moving forward, you know, this will be not be called Sempre anymore. We will be called Far From Vesuvius. You will see our name change on Twitter and all the other social media channels, but do not, you don't need to delete us. We're going to keep the same account, just with a different name. So don't be alarmed if you see the name change coming, you know, pretty soon after this podcast comes out. And we will probably be we'll be changing the website over as well. We think that this sort of just respects the history of what we've been doing, but also sort of turns over a new leaf. And I'll leave it open for anybody else who wants to chime in on the name change and anything else. But, you know, I think we all came together and just thought it was best for us moving forward.
The name change is a bit close to my heart. we may be far from Vesuvius, but Vesuvius is close to me, you know, and I think like you said, Kenny, that changing our identity a little bit was necessary just to, you know, spice things up a bit. And I'm very excited to move forward. I'm sad that this will be the last Sempre, but the first Far From Vesuvius will be, you know, not too far away. And I'm very excited to be here with you, Ken. You know, we message a lot with each other, and we have a lot of things in common. I think you're one cool dude, and I'm happy to be riding this with you and Kirsten and Marco. Marco, I respect the heck out of you too, and Kirsten, you too, for all your other podcasts works, and you guys have some of the best shows on in podcast land, and I just you guys are inspiring me to try to start one on my own with my cousins, my crazy cousins. So that might be something in the works too in my life, you know, a little bit aside from this Far From Vesuvius project. But I'm so happy to be here, and I'm gonna, you know, devote all I can to our future here.
Marco, do you know how to follow up a speech like that? Because I don't.
Nah, he was just
I know.
I'm still blushing a little.
Dude, listen, Stereo Seria and is one of my absolute favorite podcasts. You guys, what you guys do there is just amazing, dude. And I'm so thankful for you guys and what you guys do, man. You can tell everybody else I said the same.
It is. It's great.
No, you guys are being way too nice, and I really do appreciate that. And at the end of the day, I can see a lot of similarities. When we started Stereo Seria, which was Seria Live Radio, which was the Koo and Lou show at one point in time years ago, and the transformation that took, and that's what happens here. And sometimes it takes a little while till you really find your identity and what you really want and what you want to be. And I can see that here, and that's why I'm so excited to work with this team and to really build something. Because with Stereo Seria, we found there was, at the time, there really wasn't any Seria podcast in English, and when this show was started, there was no Napoli shows or podcast in English. And it's nice to be able to kind of give something and bring something back, because it's a club I think that we all keep close to our heart, and clearly that we all have a passion for. So I'm excited for what's to come, and I'm excited for the future.
Me too. Come on, guys. It's like almost 1 a.m. here. And I was up till pretty much 1 last night, too. So if you want the wise words of wisdom, you got to get me before midnight. I do want to say that I'm so glad that I joined up with Sempre, and I'm so glad that I'm moving forward with Far From Vesuvius. So don't get me wrong. It's just I've lost most of my words.
Well, I think, you know, that will put a pretty bow on the last Sempre. So, I mean, as always, at least for now, you can, you know, still follow us at Sempre SSC Napoli, which will then sort of grandfather you into Far From Vesuvius when we switch over. You know, when you click on our profile on Twitter, you'll get all of our personal info. We're already at an hour and a half, so I'm not going to jumble y'all up with any more information. But follow us on Twitter, get involved with us. We have a whole bunch of new stuff coming. The website will be switching over, new designs, hopefully new shirts soon, and of course, ideas, and don't ever forget new ideas, and don't ever forget Forza Napoli.
Sempre.